This week's episode of The Dive is brought to you by Pelican Brewing. For nearly 30 years, Pelican Brewing has crafted the most balanced tasting brews. Now, they're bringing the same satisfying taste to hop-infused sparkling water with zero alcohol and zero calories. Sparkle Hops is a hop and fruit-infused new way to elevate your everyday. Expertly brewed from hops in two flavors, Citra hop-infused sparkling water with lemon and Strata hop-infused sparkling water with acai. Start with a sip and breeze away with the balance of quality hops, ripe fruit, and punchy fizz. Refreshment, it's a Pelican thing. Welcome to the Dive Podcast, presented by Willamette Week, where every Saturday we discuss the biggest news stories of the week with Portland's noisiest newsmakers, savviest culturistas, and some of the best journalists in the game. I'm your host, Brianna Wheeler, and I want to hear from you. So send your questions and comments to me, bwheeler@wweek.com. All right, y'all, enjoy the show. Emotions were running hot in the weeks before we voted, and now that we've crossed the threshold, the city seems to be vibrating with a well, what now? Type of energy. I know city council is probably salty as hell, charter reform passed. And ultra-conservative rural Oregonians are probably less than stoked about their new steamrolling lesbian governor. Potential new city council candidates are already sniffing the air for support, and bureaus are already shifting gears. Agendas are crystallizing, and change is coming. Well, more change is coming. And I think, despite the rhetoric, we are all, regardless of political affiliations, super thirsty for it. It's Saturday, November 19th, and this is episode 98 of The Dive. Today I'm chatting with two of WW Newsroom's champions, the always effluviant Sophie Peel and the universally esteemed Nigel Jaquess, about what we as Portlanders can expect from both charter reform and our new powerhouse governor, Tina Kotek, who graced this week's cover as an effigy to Captain America, her favorite superhero. I see you, Tina. Cap is corny, and we're really in more of a She-Hulk era, but I still see you. And I really hope you snagged a copy of this week's paper, because your cover, created by artist Stefan Pelnet, absolutely deserves a thick-ass decorative frame. Sophie will break down charter reform for us. Then Nigel and I will unpack his cover story, Captain Kotek, in just one second. But first, here's what I learned from this week's edition of Willamette Week. Lucas Manfield reports that three cases stemming from 2020 protests hinge on Oregon's questionable, if not outright problematic, definition of a riot. The state defines a riot as five or more people creating a grave risk of causing public alarm through violence or tumultuous conduct, which literally describes every bro-dude bachelor party stumbling through the Pearl on a Saturday night, right? Emma McDermott wrote a legal brief in October arguing the state law is unconstitutional, vague, and gives police broad justification to make arrests. I wonder, what do we call a group of five or more cops creating a grave risk of causing public alarm through violence or tumultuous conduct? Because a riot of cops sounds about right. Homegirl Rachel Saslow reports about attempts to ban the sale of foie gras in Portland. Politicians seem to think it's a low-priority issue, considering our current state of affairs. Even though foie gras is a fucked-up food to both produce and eat, I'm inclined to agree. But in 2 years, when there are 12 council members, we could see the end of foie gras in Portland. And to the half a dozen restaurants who still serve it, you don't have to be a bleeding-heart vegan to consider animal welfare. I don't think it's wild to assert that trauma probably shouldn't be a seasoning. In his annual publisher's letter, WW's fearless leader Mark Zussman announced some significant changes to the paper, namely that he will be stepping down as publisher and handing his reins to Anna Zussman. Congrats, Anna. Also, everyone's favorite news editor Aaron Mesh will also be promoted to managing editor. I will see you on the back pages, Aaron, because that's where I smoke weed while I'm writing the Potlander columns. And of course, congratulations. Now, let's catch up with Sophie Peel about charter reform.
So most of these changes, or basically all of these changes, have to be implemented by fall of 2024, because that's when our first slate of city council candidates are going to run in these four new districts. So a lot has to happen in the next 2 years. It's a tight timeline. First order of business for the most part is Ted Wheeler has to pick members of three different committees. So that's a boundary drawn committee, and they're the committee. It's a 13-member committee, and they are tasked with drawing the boundaries of the four geographic voting districts. And then the another committee is the salary committee, which is a 5-person committee, and they are going to pick the salaries of the mayor, the auditor, and then the city council people. And then there's a third committee, which is a little unclear as to sort of what its mission is and what that's going to look like, but it's going to be an advisory committee that basically advises the mayor, city council, and you know, the bureaucrats who are basically overseeing this change. They're going to advise them on various things about this change. So we really have a lot of details yet about what that advisory committee is going to look like, and really if they have any teeth in decision making, or if they're just more sort of a you know, a true advisory committee where they don't really have any final say over anything. So a lot has to happen. We're going to establish, you know, council offices in all four geographic districts. So that's going to be a big haul, whether that's construction or whether that's, you know, finding spaces to lease. There's a lot that has to happen in 2 years. And I know 2 years sounds like a long time, but I think looking at the magnitude of the changes that they have to implement, it is a big lift.
Did you say Ted Wheeler was appointing these new committees?
Yeah, so it's really interesting. So the charter, you know, the original charter commission, the 20-member commission, in their charter language that obviously just got passed, they, you know, they gave the mayor, who obviously is Ted Wheeler right now, the ability to appoint all the members of both of those committees, so the salary committee and then also the geographic boundaries committee. And that's a little bit different than how the charter commission itself was formed. So the charter commission, you know, there was a pool of almost 300 applicants, and then a staffer within the city, the project manager of the charter commission, sort of sent her kind of 50 recommendations, and then city council, for the most part, each nominated 4 people that they wanted to serve on the commission. And it sort of went off without a hitch. I mean, no one was really, I don't think, scrutinizing these candidates, and they you know, there wasn't really all that much discussion. But now Wheeler has, you know, pretty much, he doesn't have unilateral authority because city council does have to approve with at least a 3-2 majority. That being said, let's say Wheeler were to kind of swing the other way, because on the charter commission, we had a lot of, you know, young activists, some nonprofit leaders, you know, very progressive, and then a couple sort of moderates. But if Wheeler were to sort of swing the other way and pick, not saying he would do this, but, you know, 10 downtown business owners, he has a council where, you know, 3 of his council people come January are going to be very aligned with him. So I don't think he's going to get any pushback on his appointment. So it's going to be really interesting to see what sort of strategy he takes, or if he sort of, you know, does it similarly to how he did the charter commission.
Mm-hmm. Which is to say that the Charter Commission was kind of left to their own devices, and they were more or less unsupervised when coming up with their reforms. Is that correct?
They were. And, you know, they're an independent committee, so they are supposed to be independent thinking. But at the same time, I think a lot of onlookers saw, you know, city council sort of leaving them entirely to their own devices as abdicating their duties. Because what happened is the Charter Commission, you know, they voted through a proposal that you know, lumped everything into one. Obviously it passed, but 3 council people, Mingus Mapps, Dan Ryan, and Ted Wheeler, all came out after the fact and said, I really don't like this proposal.
Yeah.
I'm not going to vote for this proposal. And as leaders of this city, you know, that is meaningful. Obviously it didn't mean that much, but you know, they let it go for a year and a half without really paying any attention to it. And then this sort of fight happens that blows up after they put it on the ballot, that, you know, 3 of our city council people are saying, this is a bad proposal and we don't want it. With one going so far as saying, I'm going to put an alternative ballot on the, you know, on the spring ballot if this one dies. So it I think to a lot of people, again, it just felt like city council was not paying attention to, like, arguably the most important thing that's happened in our city in years.
Yeah. Yeah. That is a rough, like, the idea that before charter reform was on the ballot, they were so pro, we can't get anything done because this system doesn't work. And so we plan a new system, and they're like, this system's terrible. but where were you when they were putting it together? That is very frustrating.
I think it's so, one of the most interesting things, I think, is the day after the ballot measure passed, Wheeler decided or announced he was going to reshuffle all the bureaus. And he was going to cluster them into, you know, quote unquote, service areas. And so he did that. And he said, I'm doing this because this is going to, you know, cut the red tape that keeps us inhibited from getting anything done. It's going to make sense. We're going to be basically kind of shifting to that city manager, you know, kind of region by lumping all these bureaus that sort of make sense together. And, you know, for so long, he said, I can't do anything because of this form of government. But if it was as simple as shifting the bureaus around into cluster areas, he could have done that at any point. I mean, one of the, in this weak mayor system that we have, one of the strongest tools that the mayor has that he can wield is reshuffling of bureaus. It keeps city council people on their toes. It's sort of a form of soft punishment of taking away a bureau and putting it under someone else. So, you know, the fact that he could have done that all along, and then, you know, what he said to us when we asked him, why didn't you do this before? He said, well, now it's politically viable to do so. But mayors have always, you know, not always, Ted Wheeler did not, but mayors prior have really used their power of shuffling bureaus as, you know, as a power tool. And so anyways, that felt a little ironic, I think, to me. Now he was using that tool that he could have used whenever.
Now let's chat with Nigel about his cover piece, Captain Kotek. What exactly is Tina Kotek's plan for a healthy, more prosperous, more united Oregon?
Well, I think she's identified three areas that she really wants to make immediate progress on. They are the related areas of housing and homelessness, and a third area, which is also related to those first two, of addressing untreated mental illness and substance use disorder. I think all of those factors have contributed to this, to the visible reality and to the perception among voters, among Oregonians, that things are a little bit out of control or a lot out of control, and that the state is not doing its part to help the people who need help find shelter and find treatment.
Mm-hmm. The housing crisis is a big priority. So I was wondering how Kotek's plans might affect Mayor Wheeler's plans for his, banning homelessness?
Well, I know Kotek met with Wheeler. One of her first priorities this week was to meet with him and to figure out, to hear more, because he had already briefed her when before he released this plan to the public a couple of weeks ago. He briefed Kotek and the other leading contenders for governor, Christine Drazen and Betsy Johnson. So I think that they are coming at the same issue, which is that they're hearing from constituents that the current state of affairs is intolerable and unsustainable and unacceptable. And, you know, they'll work in different ways to address that. But I think what I'm hearing from both of them is that they know that what we've been doing isn't working.
We talked a couple of months ago. You did a profile pre-election on Tina, and you and I talked about how her own staffer, or how people that she works with on the day-to-day, what their impressions of her were. And I was thinking about that conversation that we had, and I was wondering, what do you think are going to be the big roadblocks that she comes up against?
Well, I think that she, in the earlier story I wrote about Kotek, I did focus to some degree on the fact that a lot of Democrats didn't like her. They felt that she had rolled over them. She had done things to achieve her agenda that had caused them harm or pain or discomfort. And I'm respectful of their feelings, and I understand their feelings. I think that her willingness to do that is part of the reason that I feel some optimism about her as a governor, not because she's inhumane or an unpleasant or unkind person, but because she has demonstrated that when she identifies a goal or an objective, she'll do pretty much anything she can to achieve that goal or objective. And I think that's the kind of mentality that will be helpful in trying to overcome the obstacles she does face. So what are those obstacles? You know, there are entrenched ways of thinking in government and in social service nonprofits about the best way to deal with housing, homelessness, mental illness, and addiction. Those entrenched ways of thinking are not effective at this point. Mm-hmm. So she's going to have to get people to think differently about fields in which they are experts or in which they have worked for their whole careers. It's very hard to change human behavior.
Yeah.
She's going to have to overcome inertia. She's going to have to overcome the fear of doing things differently. She's going to have to overcome people's fear in this city and in this county of, I think, a fear of holding people accountable for their own actions or letting people know there are consequences for their actions. We've had an approach in Portland and in many Oregon cities of kind of, you know, there's this fierce independence in this state. Let's let people do what they want. Let's let people have the freedom to be who they are. Mm. And that's commendable, and it's one of the things that makes Oregon a great place to live. However, when those things that people do are harmful to themselves and others and have a negative effect on the public as a whole, we have to think differently about them. We may have to say to people, hey, you can't do just what you want to do or only what you want to do. No, you can't sleep anywhere you want to. So I think she's going to face opposition in all those areas. I do think she faces a challenge. She's had a very specific focus as Speaker of the House for 9 years, and that's to enact a Democratic agenda. Now she's got to be bigger than that. She's got to have a wider ambit, and she's got to serve all of Oregon, and she's going to have to think about constituencies that she didn't have to think as much about. She's going to have to make sure that, you know, that working people who have always been her main focus get what they need. She's going to have to work with the people who brought her, those are the public employee unions and private sector unions. Uh-huh. She's also going to have to make sure that people like Intel want to continue investing billions of dollars in this state. That's a different focus for her. She's going to have to make sure that companies that might move to Idaho or Washington or California have a good reason to stay in Oregon. She's going to have to say to the Oregon Education Association, the statewide teachers union, hey, we have to do something about the performance in our schools, and you've got to be part of that, and you may have to do things that you don't like or don't want to do. So she's going to have to hold friends accountable. She's going to have to talk to different groups than she's spoken to before. I think she's, you know, she's a capable, highly capable person.
What was the most promising thing that you learned about Tina while you were reporting this piece?
Yeah, I think in an odd way that her greatest strength is the thing that people maybe like the least about her, and that is that willingness to do anything to achieve her goal. And I think that if people act with that kind of single-minded focus in pursuit of the public's interest or what they perceive to be the public's interest or the interest of a large group of people, that's extremely powerful and useful. People who are very successful have a single-mindedness about what they're trying to achieve. And we don't often see that in politics, because politics is the art of compromise. It's the art of the possible, which often means that you have to make a lot of concessions and do a lot of things you don't want to do. And because, you know, there are a lot of constituencies in the political realm. So the thing that really angers some people about Kotek is that she is just focused on getting stuff done. And that hurts if you're in the way and you get run over, or she takes away a gavel, or she demotes you, or otherwise makes your life difficult. But if I'm looking at the public's interest, and I think the public's interest in Oregon is to have government deliver services more effectively for the benefit of everyone, mm-hmm. that's what scares people about her, that's what makes me optimistic about her.
That makes me optimistic about her, too. I also see that as a particular strength. Was there anything left out of the profile?
I've heard from a lot of people who didn't like the story and who are skeptical of whether Kotek can be a good governor and whether Democrats have the right priorities. And I think that was something that was left out, and maybe it's left out because it's so obvious it doesn't bear discussion, but we really had a robust governor's race in a way that I think was really, of course, there were a lot of negative ads, there was a lot of name calling and grainy hit pieces that lasted for 30 seconds. But I think we had a really robust debate about what people are unhappy about in Oregon and what people want for the future. We had three really strong candidates. Nobody knows the inner workings of state government better than Betsy Johnson. The Republicans found in Christine Drazen somebody who can really articulate why Republicans are unhappy and what they would like to see differently. So sometimes elections in this state are so one-sided or so bereft of content that they barely merit mention. I think we had a real airing of what's wrong in this state in a way that will help us get to what's right. And so I think that while I wrote in the story that Tina Kotek got a smaller percentage of the vote than any governor since Barbara Roberts in 1990, I think she also got, she also won. She convinced voters that what she wants to do is the right thing to do. And I think people are unhappy with the results should think about that, because the voters were given three very good choices, three very different choices. This is who they chose.
Thanks to this week's guests, Sophie Peel and Nigel Jaquess, and thank you for joining me. And if you're a constant reader and or listener, please consider joining Friends of Willamette Week, a new source for funding for quality news reporting in Portland. Learn more at wweek.com/support. All right, y'all. I'll talk at you next week. Till then, bye!